before you start.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're resuming our discussion of your time at GB Animation in Cookham. So you were only there for about a year or even less than a year.
Just under the year.
One thing I think that interests people a lot is how teams adapt to change. Were there any changes introduced in that time? Different practices?
But I think they were always trying to perfect the whole thing, mm-hmm. The whole time finding new ways of perfecting the job all the time, which you weren't necessarily always involved in it.
Mm. So who would be making those sorts of decisions, do you know?
The production team.
Yeah. Mm.
They would be learning all. It's a learning curve, really, the whole time. It still is.
Mm. Mm. Did you have any sense at the time of how the films? You said you saw that the Thames film. Mm. Did you have any sense of how they were being received? How they were being reviewed and so forth?
Not really. No. Yeah. I just made an impression on me because it was so original. And I was interested in this art form, and they were beautifully done. Mm. They really were.
Mm. Was there any dress code required? Did you turn up in what you had?
We did have an overall because obviously that was a pain to that sort. If it got on your clothes, it was not easy to get off.
Mm.
Mm. The girl that did the paint mixing had an enormous overall, and she was sort of like a psychedelic. You've got dabs of different coloured paint all over her. Well, she tested bits out, I think, on her overall.
You already described the working day and what the hours were. What other kind of terms did you have on your contract? Did you have any holiday?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
We did have 2 weeks holiday paid per year.
What happened if the damp and the food got to you and laid you low, ill for a bit? Would you got sick pay?
A lady called Miss Salberg.
Miss Salberg?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll tell you what most of the people called her. And a very large, overfed cat. She ran it, and if you had anything wrong with you, you went. And they had a nurse who was completely useless, as far as I can remember now. You wanted anything else? There was a dentist in the village.
In the town, yeah.
Who didn't go to if you could help it because he had the shakes, and he would drill every tooth in your head before he got to the right one.
Cookham sounds like it was a very eccentric sort of place. Really.
It was, and it was lined with pubs, Cookham. Mm-hmm. And that was the only entertainment there was in the village.
I was going to ask what you spent what little remained of your money and so.
Ron often said he wished that he hadn't spent so much. That there was nothing else to spend. He just went from pub to pub until some of them banned them, for one reason or another. And there was a tea place there called the Copper Kettle, but most of us couldn't afford to go there.
Right.
Get some extra, and you could in the evening in the hall. There was a little canteen, it was a hatchway really in the hotel hall really, and you could get a glass of milk or something like that. Then again, if you hadn't got money, you couldn't have it.
Mm. Did you have the chance to pop home at any time?
We used to go home to my home, sometimes home to Ron's home.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron was extremely good because he sent some of it. He earned a lot more than I did. I think he must have earned about £8, which was a lot then. But he had a sort of top job, really, the story men. And he sent a lot of his home, as he always did, to his parents.
Yes.
We were not well off at all.
So they were in Southgate, weren't they?
Yes.
And your parents, they were in Woodford, then, or they had been
moved
to Kent?
No, we were in Sidcup.
Yeah.
Still. My father was still working at college then, before he retired.
So we'll come on to Ron, your husband, my father, in a moment. But what other kind of lasting friendships did you make down there?
Enid and Mike.
Weston,
It brought her down from the north. Mm. Ostensibly with her boyfriend, who was at Cookham, on camera, I think.
Mm.
And then he moved to London to another job, and she was left down there, and immediately was snapped up by Mike Weston. Mike was an animator.
Yes.
I think a very good one.
So Enid was in the
yes,
paint department
as
well.
And we also made Joyce, who I thought was in the paint department, and Howard. No, I think he was clean up.
Howard White. Yeah.
Howard White.
Yes.
We made a lasting. She's lasted all our lives, and he's still alive to this day. He must be 90. I remember he was a fantastic cricketer. Absolutely. Really fantastic. Very nice man. And there were really quite a few others that we made long-lasting friendships with there. Because we all had a like interest in the artistic world.
Yes.
And it was great fun,
So it was that post-war period. Well, it was a bit like going off to university, I suppose, in some ways, except you were working away from the war.
Dad had 4 years training to do it before he was considered good enough to, which he made very good use of.
How about Percy Poynter? Was he there when you...
Was there, down there when I went, and he was background, as he was a fantastic artist. So he did all the backgrounds.
And the other name, of course, I remember because he was with Godfather, Eric Bradbury, wasn't
he? I can't remember whether he was an animator. I think he was an animator.
Right.
And he subsequently worked with his dad afterwards. He was the other half of the... He was the Ron was doing the ideas for IPC, and he was doing the finished work. And then he stayed on the outside and went on the inside. And he worked for them all his life, Eric, IPC.
Mm-hmm.
His working life, he's a pretty good artist.
So I suppose the big change that did come along, of course, was, as you said, that J. Arthur Rank decided to make carry-on films rather than films. How did that message get communicated to you?
The chap who was in charge of, I presume, the finance side of it and so forth, had a meeting and said what was happening, and we said, well, where does that leave us? And he didn't really seem to care very much. In other words, we'll pay you off and give you a good reference. And that's it, folks.
So nobody didn't have any kind of union or any kind of work?
Yes, they did have a union.
Oh, right.
Oh, yes, they did. But they were powerless.
Do you remember which union it was?
Probably the journalists.
Journalists, yeah.
I think it was. There was quite a strong union feeling there. But it was nothing we could do. And the whole thing was disbanded. And I say there were a lot of out-of-work people, but so many of them did make good in their own right from there. Nick Spargo, for one, who went on... I can't remember the name of the film. He did on BBC for a long time. He did very well.
The chap who you're working with in Paris as well, whose name escapes me at the moment. who's just died recently. Yes, another of your lifetime friends, of course, was Jack Stokes, who...
So I suppose, Maidenhead.
Yes, and was he responsible for getting Dad to work out in Paris and as well yes, in the 80s?
He was. So, he got together with a lot of the old Cookhamites. And they had a meeting in London, and he said, "I want you, Robbie." And another chap who wasn't at Cookham came with him.
Was that Ted?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ted Holmes, yes. But he didn't work at Cookham.
What, I'm quite interested how, because it was quite a bold step for you to make that day in February 49 to sort of leave the city and go off to the wilds of Berkshire. How did that go down with your parents at the time?
Well with my father, and not at all well with my mother, I'm afraid. I mean, that's a long story which probably doesn't come into this.
No, but it's interesting your father backed it because he was in the sort of the higher end of art and so forth. So, but I guess he sensed that you were going to learn some...
Well, at some stage in his youth, he had worked on the cartoon films with that cat, Felix.
Felix, really?
Yes. Yeah. And so that he pricked up his ears. So, I always like cartoon films.
You know, what had he done with Felix film? You don't know.
Something happened in his youth.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, he just said you've nothing to lose, you know, go and see what it's like.
So, of course, the other lasting relationship you made down there, friendship and so forth, was meeting Dad. How did you meet Ron?
Well, when I first got down there, I got snapped up by the current heartthrob that they had there. It was a very pretty face, but nothing else. He was a nice lad. Mm-hmm. Went to Canada afterwards. He was very sought after by all the girls, and they were a bit annoyed at this newcomer. Grabbed him. Well, I didn't. He took me straight out. And when I realised that there was nothing much to him, really, one of the cameramen, Bill, what was his name? I befriended a red-haired chap in camera. I can't remember his name now.
Was it Bill Holdroyd, was it?
No, he was one of the older ones, right. Bill Holdroyd, because he'd been in the army through the war.
Yeah.
Lost myself again.
we were just talking about the second person who snapped you up.
This young chap came in one day, and Sheila asked what he wanted, and he said, "Could he speak to me?" And Sheila, yes, if it meant we could about it, you know. And came over and knelt down on the floor and said, "My friend wants to go out with you." I said, "What friend?" And he said, I said, "Well, can tell him to come and ask him myself, you know, don't send the messenger."
Was this Bill Elmer by any chance? Yeah.
He said, "Well, don't shoot the messenger, you know." Sharp with him. He went off. And duly I was introduced to this young man who I wasn't at all impressed with. and it sort of grew from there.
Right. Well, something about it must have impressed you then, I suppose.
It did, eventually. What a fantastic character he was.
So whenabouts was that? Do you remember what month?
That would have been at the end of April into May that year. We eventually started going out. I went home one weekend, and we had to go to Victoria coach station from Charing Cross then, and then go down to Cookham on the coach, because it was cheaper than going on the train.
Yes.
And likewise, Dad had obviously been home to Southgate, and coming on the same train, the same coach with me. And there at the coach station was this young man who promptly took my case from me.
Mm.
And I thought, well, that's a nice gesture, you know.
So was that, you'd already met him by then, had you?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sort of just took it for granted he would take my case and see me onto the coach. You know, sure. I began to think perhaps he might be right.
So did you, there's a nice picture of you two dressed as school kids with a bike.
Oh, that was one of the parties. It was Ronald Searle's school kids.
Oh, right, yes.
And he had ginger nut braces, which was one of the films they made. We made those up and cut some trousers short. And he had a cap and he blacked a tooth out. And he had a catapult made of a big stick and a bicycle, which he was picking pellets at people in general, including the band. And I wore my sister's June tunic, did my hair in plaits, black stockings, and I think I had her little berry too. And there again, I blacked my tooth out, and we were just generally a nuisance, and we rode around on a very ancient bicycle.
It was a tandem, was it?
No, it was just an ordinary. I sat on a crossbar.
You sat on
the crossbar. We rode into the dance hall. And we won the prize, actually.
Well, he, Dad cycled a lot, didn't he? He
yeah.
Charged off around. Were you cycling as well at
he
stage?
Bought, he bought a cycle bicycle for me, a second hand, for £1,
mm-hmm.
painted it up for me beautifully, and made sure it was in working order. When I couldn't keep up with him, he was down the road and disappeared in a flash. Well, you know, the gears, I only had one gear, I think, so I couldn't keep up with him. He went all over the, you know, after Wales with Eric Bradbury, all around the weekend.
I was thinking of other pastimes, that you said there was a... it was a cricket team they had down there, so the hot summer.
Team too.
And a football team.
Mm. And we went swimming in the Thames, which is decidedly dicey if I think about it now.
All the currents and things.
And if you couldn't, getting out of the, up in the banks, on those steps or anything, you had to clamber up the muddy banks. We went in at one stage at a place we hadn't been into once before. And went up to our middles in horrible, stinking mud.
Oof.
Mm. That was terrifying, but didn't we get out?
So you generally go
they
down...
They were rotten, though, with that swimming, because some of them would go down gaily and leave their clothes, and someone would come along later on and pinch the clothes and take them back to the studio, so they came out and to come back in a wet bathing costume, no towel, no clothes.
You do all these things as groups, basically. I suppose if you all had were working at the same time, you didn't have night shifts, did you? No,
we didn't. But we spent all the rest of the time walking.
Uh-huh.
And then Dad had this little car, so we could go into
Marlow.
And to Maidenhead. But the trouble was that it used to stop at regular intervals, and you had to crank wind it up. And if you were on one of the big hills there, I used to worry as to whether it was going to go backwards while he was fiddling with the crank in the front. It didn't. And there were no windscreen wipers on it, and there were no indicators, so you had to put your hands out on the side. And if it was foggy, you had to put your head out of the car. It was just open and no windows. And just hope to goodness that you got home. Well, there was very little traffic on the roads in those days. But, there were always people there, mechanics, and would be only... They thoroughly enjoyed it. If anything went wrong with the car, they'd all leap on it and work on
it for
him.
Yeah.
He wasn't very mechanically minded.
Well, it sounds like you had a lot of fun. Anyway,
we had an awful lot of fun, yes. Yeah. There was no expense involved.
No.
I did take him back to the theatre later on while we were down there to see a couple of operas.
Mm.
And I took him to Aida and went through the back way. The fireman let me go through the fire, which was a very complicated way to go through to the stage. And I thought he was very quiet, and he was drawing the Swedish, and I wished we had kept that drawing. I don't know what happened to it. It was the funniest thing I have ever seen. He had the biggest feet. He took size 16. It was huge, and Tor Hannestein, I think his name was.
Mm.
And he had must have been at well over 6 foot. And Dad was watching him, and with the drawing had his uvula going up and down.
So while you were watching the opera,
it's the first thing in the opera, which is very difficult for a tenor to come on from scratch and produce this enormous aria. He wasn't listening to him, he was just looking at him.
Yeah.
And he made this wonderful drawing. And
was music something you had in common then? Because,
not really, no. He grew to enjoy it, but he loved jazz.
Mm.
He liked certain aspects of music, but not in any great depth.
Mm. So you would have opened his ears to things like Verdi operas and
he grew to appreciate a lot of music as the years went on.
Mm.
And I never forgot my love of music. You know, it was one of my first loves, apart from drawing. It had always been music since I was a little girl. But we didn't have the access to anything to do with it very much. In those days.
Were you actually, you mentioned you had the radio going, did you ever have any choice over what was listened to, or was it assumed you wanted to listen to presumably the light programme, would it be then, if you were listening to music while you work?
I was allowed to watch the Children's Hour, listen to the Children's Hour.
Yeah.
Nobody had a gramophone or anything like that that I knew of until I was a bit older.
Presumably you were kind of writing home and writing to friends about what you were doing and so forth. Mm. Did any of them actually come down to visit?
Yes, they did. Yes. Yes, we had I think there was a guest room there. I don't know whether there was or not. I know when my mother came, she stayed in where we were sleeping. Somebody had gone home for the weekend and she had her bed. I can't remember where my father slept. It must have been in this room they had, set aside.
What did they make of it when they came down?
Well, they both loved it. Loved it.
So it must have been a nice setting, I suppose. Grand house, the river.
It was lovely.
The village of Cookham.
I think we must have walked miles, because in the evening we would just walk and walk and walk. And it was lovely by the river. And it was such beautiful weather. And I remember there was the wild flowers then.
Hmm.
And if you remember that song at his funeral.
Oh, yes, the Fields of Barley.
Fields of Gold, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was so true, because many of the fields were just one mass of buttercups.
Mm.
Just literally not, you couldn't put an inch between them.
Mm.
So we were really walking through the fields of gold.
Mm.
And the wildflowers. He had an interest in nature the same as I did too. So we. This is where Simon. Is it from, and from her father?
Well, he always mentioned that he liked observing, so that's what his mum, Nana, always pointing things out to him all the time.
Mm.
So he managed to, that's why he's always looking up, I suppose, and looking around.
Mm.
Well, that's an important.
Yeah, it is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a very happy time.
Did any of his friends come down as well?
Yes.
Is that how you got to meet them, in fact, by them coming down to...
Yes. Down to most of his friends were married.
Right.
He was the last one of the set that came out of the forces that got married. Mm. And they were all waiting anxiously to see what Nobby would come up with. So I was duly marched to see each of them and put through the third degree.
Who did you meet first of his friends? Do you remember?
Bucket.
Ron Hemingway.
Yeah. Hemingway, yeah.
Was he already married to Iris?
Oh, yes, he'd got it as a child.
Uh-huh.
And little Jane.
Mm.
And Homer.
Does Ron and Ione Holmes, then they were both married by then as well.
Yeah, they're married. They have just had their 74th anniversary.
Goodness me.
As they married just before he went on operational, because so many of them didn't come back.
Mm.
So they got married while they could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So can you remember when it was that you... You packed your bags and left Cookham?
Yes, the end of January 1950.
Right.
And we were due to get married at the end of March.
Mm.
It was all arranged. We were probably going to live in High Wycombe,
mm-hmm.
if we could find somewhere to live. And of course, all that went out of the window. We neither of us got a job. And we said, well, what do we do now? Do we still get married? And I said, we're going to hit up against a lot of problems in the years ahead.
Mm.
We may as well face it together. So we'll do it and we'll hope that... And everything fell into place.
Mm.
He got the job, and eventually I got a job which had been offered to me while I was at the studios in a studio in London. Just off the Strand, Jane remembers it, A.S. Knight's,
the
artist agents,
right.
Very good artist agents too, and they had offered me a job just when I was at Cookham, because I'd been to see them when I was walking around looking for a job, and they said, we haven't got anything at the moment, but they seemed quite impressed, and... he said, we can only offer you a job as an agent, but you know what you're doing. And they wrote to me at Cookham, and I said, well, I've just got engaged and I've got settled in here. Can I decline at the moment? But thank you very much for the offer.
Mm.
So when I came back and eventually settled in, I wrote to them and said, is there any chance of a job going now? And they wrote back and said, come up and see us. Went up there and she said, the job's yours.
Great.
I went part-time to London, mm-hmm. 3 days a week.
So where were you living then? Had you moved in to Southgate?
My in-laws were fantastic. Mm-hmm. They had, this house was quite a decent size. And they took the whole of the top floor over for us. And my father-in-law painted the kitchen, which was Ron's bedroom. We had to sink, so we had to use the bath, put a top on the bath and put a basin on it.
Right.
Take water down the loo. We had to get water from downstairs because you couldn't drink the bath water.
Mm-hmm.
We had a stove put in, and we were very happily settled there, and they were marvellous. You know, they really put themselves out for us.
Mm.
They really did, because it was so difficult finding anywhere to live, and most people were living with their in-laws or anybody anyway because of there were so many houses bombed.
Yes. Mm.
Including where he was.
Mm.
So
you both travel up? Did you both travel up together then on the tube?
Yes. No, we didn't. He went later than I did, and came back later.
Okay, so this is about to finish now, so we'll reserve the story of Nellie and Albert for another time.